day. This is Shane Hasty for the InfoQ Culture Podcast. We're here at the Agile New Zealand Conference, and I'm talking to Dave West. Dave is the product owner for Scrum.org.
Yeah,
Dave?
CEO, product owner.
CEO and product owner for Scrum.org. Dave, welcome. You and I obviously know each other. Would you mind briefly introducing yourself for the audience?
Oh, yeah, sure, Shane. It's going to bore you, obviously. So my name's Dave West. I am, as I said, the CEO, product owner at Scrum.org. Prior to Scrum.org, I worked for a company called Tasktop. I was chief product officer, delivering software, growing an engineering organization, a product organization. Prior to that, Forrester Research, ran the app dev practice there. Back in my very shady past, I was the RUP product manager. I know, boo, hiss, hiss, boo. Pitchforks notwithstanding, it was a very interesting experience. At Scrum.org, though, I'm responsible for defining really what we do and what Scrum becomes, where it's going. I'm responsible, obviously, for the day-to-day management of the Scrum.org organization. It's a mission-based organization. And also responsible for, you know, deciding where we invest the time and effort to build the future of Scrum.
So if we think about the InfoQ audience, they tend to be very technical, leaders in their space, thought leaders, influencers. Isn't Scrum old hat now?
It is 21 years old, so obviously if you're a 10-year-old, you'd think 21's really old, but it's been around for 21 years. It was the seminal paper, the creation paper was written for Uppsala in 95, and since then it definitely has changed significantly, but ultimately that was its birth to the market. Is it relevant? That's an interesting question. It's practiced between 12 and 15 million people, depending on which analyst firm you believe, and I say that as an ex-analyst, every day. We see the roles, product owner, Scrum Master, hugely, like in every, whether it's monster.com or any of the job postings, hundreds of those being posted every day. We see it really still being practiced a lot in the industry. At the heart of Scrum, though, it's interesting because Scrum.org's mission isn't about Scrum. It's about to improve the profession of software delivery.
Right.
And Scrum is a mechanism that you use to do that. Now, you know, obviously we have certain invested passion in Scrum, hence the name of the organization. But ultimately, Scrum is about improving the profession of software delivery because we believe, and Ken believed, and Jeff and Ken believed 21, 25, 30 years ago, that empiricism and in the scientific method is fundamental to being a professional in an industry. There's a large amount of the unknown that you're navigating, a large amount of complexity, a large amount of surprises. The reality is that you need to navigate that in an empirical way, you know, define small chunks of hypothesis as was presented yesterday. These small chunks need to then be executed against. You learn from those small chunks, and you inspect and adapt and via transparency. Now, I believe, Shane, that those principles and those ideas are still as relevant today, in fact, probably more relevant than they were 21 years ago. If we look at our environment, we look at our community, and we look at the projects and products that they're working on, the innovation is huge, right? We're all wanting to become digital. We all want to become a software company with wings. That was the CIO of United. You know, we all want to basically use software to deliver experiences to our customers, to build relationships with our customers who've never done before. To do that requires empiricism. And Scrum is, in my opinion, it might not be the only way of doing it, but it's certainly the way that is well documented and well understood.
We talk about empiricism. But isn't building software a craft?
Yeah, and that's an interesting thing about empiricism and the craft. They're a perfect combination. So craftsmanship is all about demonstrating your master, you know, the sort of apprentice, journeyman, master, demonstrating master, your masterpiece to the community, learning, etc. Now, the best way of doing that is obviously in an empirical way. It's a skill that you need. It's at the heart of any good professional approach. So I think craftsmanship and Scrum are perfectly, have a great union. And in fact, if you remember the first book, you know, the one with the red, blue, green with Mike Beadle, Ken Schwaber, Mike Beadle wrote, it's Scrum and XP. They're sort of intrinsically linked. And at the heart of the craftsman movement is definitely the XP kind of ideas. So I think that maybe we've lost a bit of that as more project managers and religious zealot Scrumus is people come have become, but ultimately at the heart of it is that synergy between craftsmanship and empiricism.
What is the state of Scrum today? What's happening in the Scrum world?
Okay, so that's an interesting question. I'll be presenting that at the conference here at Agile New Zealand, the closing keynote. So I close the conference, which doesn't sound very good, does it? But anyway, so what is the state of Scrum? So if we look at the current state of the craft. So it's 90% of agile of teams that are doing agile say they're doing some form of Scrum. 90%. That translates into between 12 and 15 million people every day doing Scrum. The reality, though, is that, and this is some research I did when I was at Forrester, the reality is that most organizations are doing water Scrum form. Yes, they're doing Scrum at the team level, but it's working in an environment that's very waterfall. So, yeah, we're doing Scrum, but we only plan once a year. Come on, planning takes forever, you know, deciding what our priorities are, setting the roadmap, all that stuff happens once a year. We get down to really detailed plans, and then the teams do their stuff. So it's water Scrum. Yeah, we're doing Scrum, but we release software only once a year. I mean, how can you release software more frequently? That sounds awful. Our customers don't want that. But we're doing Scrum. So there's this water Scrum fall that we see in the reality of most Scrum implementations. And that reality requires a lot more than just Scrum to fix. It requires ultimately, yes, Scrum at the team or team of teams level, at the practice level, but at the planning, the portfolio management, the, dare I say, even the release and DevOps kind of world need to also understand that. And there's a lot of things changing in all these environments to maybe facilitate that. But so the state of Scrum is that Scrum is very strong, being practiced. The reality, though, is it's being practiced in a context of waterfall for the majority of organizations. Obviously, there is exceptions.
Well, I was at the QCon San Francisco conference recently, and that is the InfoQ target audience. Scrum and Agile weren't even topics. There was a natural assumption that, of course, you're using iterative and incremental delivery, and of course you're moving to DevOps. And the questions were very much about the hard practical things of how do we integrate DevOps into the deploying 100 times a day. So where does Scrum fit into that sort of space?
So it's funny that Ken and I presented probably 3.5 years ago at a DevOps thing. We co-presented. And so I was talking very much about, you know, how you do DevOps, the reality of delivering incrementally and iteratively. And then Ken came on and said, he goes, "Are you all idiots?" Which I thought is a nice Kenism. "Didn't you realize that ultimately Scrum has always required DevOps? The reason why it's a development team, or maybe should have been called delivery team, but the reason why it's a, you know, this team of, it's all the skills you need to deliver working software to your production system. That means you have to build relationships with operations. That means that you have to concentrate on actually getting software out." Now, I don't think that's how people have interpreted Scrum. I don't think that's how the reality of most organizations, they've fitted Scrum into their organizational construct. And ultimately, it's been a development thing, right? So Scrum is fundamental to doing DevOps, in my opinion. Or Agile certainly is, and whether you can do other forms of Agile, that's cool as well. But ultimately, you need some mechanism that allows you to structure work into small batches. You need some mechanism that allows you to inspect and adapt once that work is work. And you need to have self-organized teams. You need to have clear leadership with product owner and Scrum Master, or somebody that, if they're not called that, somebody that's doing those tasks. But you need to deliver software frequently. And what's interesting, is that people consider that the sprint review is a phase gate to bringing stuff into production, which is a massive mistake. It's not. It's an opportunity to inspect and adapt the product, to inspect and adapt at that level. And so, and you get SMEs in and product people in, and you get them in a room, and the best sprint reviews are done on production software. Now, does they have to be done on production software? No, but you shouldn't think of it as a constraint to releasing software. And that's a mistake. And I think that we need to do lots of things around bridging the gap between empiricism and Scrum and the classical operational release practices. And I think that's going to definitely be, well, I know that's a focus for 2017 for the Scrum community.
One of the things that we sometimes struggle with, or we see people struggling with, is the Scrum roles. You did touch on it. You know, is everybody got the same skills in the team? What is a product owner? But what if they can't own the product? And the Scrum Master, the Scrum Master, in many, many instances, is somebody who has done a two-day class and they've got a hat that says, "I'm now the master and I'm telling you what to do."
I hope they've got a hat. That would be great if they have a hat. Nine out of ten don't even have the hat. So it's interesting you talk about the roles. Now, the reason why there's the three roles is because there's three distinct sets of responsibilities that we observed, and Ken observed, and Jeff observed 30 years ago, that help you be successful. There's somebody that makes ultimate decisions about value. It's called that the product owner. Decides the priority of things, you know, structures the order of things from a business point of view. Ideally, in fact, I would say it's more than ideal. That's one carbon-based life form. Democracy, software delivery is not a democracy. And when it becomes a democracy, it becomes incredibly inefficient and actually ends up not helping anybody. When you have a committee signing off requirements rather than one individual being responsible for those requirements, you end up with a very slow, you end up with Bill, to use an American analogy, you end up with a bill that goes into the house and suddenly becomes bloated with all sorts of little extra niceties, you know, and that's what happens with software when you have committees working on software. So one ultimate person that is responsible for value and makes those decisions. The other thing that, you know, the role of the Scrum Master. Now, increasingly, you know, 21 years ago, the Scrum Master was really described as a project manager, as a somebody that helped the team, that protected the team, that dealt with the unrealistic and unreasonable requests of the product owner in some way. And the original wasn't called a product owner; it's called a product manager, interestingly as well. But anyway, so you need somebody that can do that. Then the third role is, I don't know what skills you need. I don't know. I don't know if you need a business analyst, a tester, a developer, a front end developer, a UX specialist, a database, a DBA, because I don't know the problem we're solving. But I do know that you need to get a group of people that can ultimately deliver done software, deliver working, potentially shippable software, and they need to work together in an effective way, and they need to self-organize. It all comes back to the new product game. That piece that was in 1985, I think, that was written in the Harvard Business Review. And what that talks about is these cross-functional teams that are very dynamic. And it doesn't talk about this, but we describe it as T-shaped. You need people that do have specialist skills. That's still very necessary. You know, you need to be a good business analyst, a good tester. You need to be a good developer. You need those skills in the situations where you need them. But you also need a broad set of skills that give you flexibility to muck in with the team. And the more successful the team is, the more flexible and the more agile it is, the broader those T's are. And the less flexible and the less dynamic, the less broad those T's are, as it were. You see that with soccer. Let's just talk about football, if you're listening to this in the United Kingdom or any other country apart from America. There was a team that won the Premiership last year, my team, Leicester City. I'm from Leicester, as you can tell from my accent. And I could fall into Leicester talk now, which nobody would understand. But anyway, so Leicester City won the Premier League and totally underdog, 5,000-1, right? Nobody knew they were going to do it. No, that was totally unpredictable. Now, interestingly, this year they are not doing very well. And the reason why is because they aren't very agile. they had a particular system that worked incredibly well. When the teams learnt that system, it's a really hard time for them. They haven't got that breadth, that T-ness. They have players that can play in a certain position. When you, they understand that, you know, they're less agile. And I think that ultimately you need a team that can be dynamic, and you need a team that has that fat T kind of shape.
What does the Scrum Master do?
That's an interesting question, because it's hard to be predictive exactly what they actually do. Ultimately, their objective is to help the team, to enable the team to actually deliver working software. Their job is to help the team resolve impediments. Their job is to manage the relationships with all the other people that are necessary to resolve those impediments. Their job is to be chief agony aunt sometimes. Depends on the team. People often say, oh, well, you know, he's too command and control, or she's too command and control to be a Scrum Master, and that can be a problem. The issue is, some situations merit a command and control type Scrum Master. Now, the people on the podcast are going, boo, no, that's never the case. Servant leaders are the only way. But a good servant leader knows their audience. You know, that empathy, that ability to change, to be the chameleon as necessary to support your team, to make your team successful, to deliver done software is crucial. And so ultimately, they have a very simple goal, to make the team successful. And to do that, they will do whatever it takes.
From an organizational perspective, what sort of, dare we say, authority or power or mandate would an organization give somebody in that role?
That's an interesting question. They need to basically free them, create an environment to allow them to be successful. The Nunu Product Game writes about this, which is interesting. So in the 80s, there were these, for the people that haven't read this piece, I think it's important that everybody in our community reads this, by the way. I think it's you know, it's similar to the manifesto. It's one of those pieces that you should read, in my opinion. And there were these organizations, 3M, Honda, and a few others, that were very successful at innovation at that time. Now, whether they still are is questionable, but they were then. And what they observed was that they were successful because the management provided very clear objectives, like, we want to deliver a car that works well in inner cities. You know, very high level, true north, this is what you want. And then got out of the way of the teams. And I think that to allow Scrum Masters to be successful, I think organizations need to do two things. I think one, get out of their way. And secondly, provide them with the support that they need to deliver on their objective, which is to make the team successful. So that means if there are certain things, there's some challenges to the team delivering done working software that the Scrum Master hasn't got the ability to influence or change, the leadership around them should make that happen in some way, shape, or form. Now, whether that be by direct intervention, whether that be by empowerment, whether that be by money, whether that be by taking photos, getting people drunk, whatever necessary, but they need to help them to be successful.
So who's responsible for the delivery of the product?
The team is responsible for delivery of the product. And that is everybody that's involved in that endeavor. Simple as that. Now, accountable, product owner. Now, I don't like to use this analogy, but it's one neck to whatever. I think we're in a session yesterday. But ultimately, when that becomes very soft and very fluid, like, oh, well, nobody's accountable, then you end up with, the motivation disappears to get it right. So the team's responsible for delivery. The what's delivered is a responsibility to the product owner, ultimately.
And there needs to be clarity in that decision-making.
Yeah, definitely. Transparency. Because ultimately, you've got to make the right... You've got to ensure that people are very aware of those decisions that you're making as a product owner. It's very important that you've articulated and delivered the what value really means to the team, so the team can then execute on that. It's less important for the details of what, you know, the features and the screens and that's less important. The team should actually make those decisions based on the context provided by the product owner and the people the product owner obviously involves to help the team.
21 years later, Where's Scrum going? What's next?
Yeah, and are we talking about this afternoon about what's next? And I think there's a few things that sort of step out. First thing is that we often talk about Scrum being empirical. Fair enough. We talk a lot about scientific method. Great, groovy. We talk a lot about teams inspecting and adapting based on transparency. Marvelous. Sounds like a t-shirt. Great. But what we don't provide effectively in our community is clear measures to allow them to do that. There's a lot of work around measurement at the moment. Larry Matriani is doing some stuff. Murray Kanter's doing. There's lots of stuff around measurement happening. But ultimately, we need as a community to provide a consistent approach to measurement. Now, Ken would believe that that measurement needs to be evidence rather than circumstantial. So it's things like velocity are interesting, but they're not actually ways of, you know, I don't care how fast you do something. I care about what the outcome is to the business. I don't care about defect density. I care about the outcome to the business. I don't care about, you know, I don't, actually, that's interesting. Do I care about team morale? No, not really. I care about the outcome to the business. You know, there's a commercial element to every, you know, now that could be a mission if we're not a commercial organization, but it, you know, whatever it is. And so building that direct evidence. So measurement, I think, is a key pillar that we need to invest in. And we need to provide our product owners and the teams that support them a mechanism to clearly articulate value. Because I think that's probably missing. And in the, you know, Lean Startup and the work of Stephen Blank and Eric Ries has definitely helped us think about this, but it's not given us enough, really, because they talk about, you know, getting that feedback loop in place, but they don't tell you what's the important things to feed the loop, as it were, or to measure the loop. So I think measurement's another thing. I personally think scaling's important. But I don't think so. Most of the scaling mechanisms that we see, whether it be safe, dad, less, are concentrating on outside of the teams. They're concentrating on how do you plan work. They're concentrating on how you release work, how you sync, how you coordinate investments, and etc. What I think we need, and what we've done with Nexus, is really concentrate on how you get multiple teams up to a certain point to work together effectively. And so Nexus concentrates on how multiple teams work together. And I think there's still a lot more work to be done there. How do you manage dependencies? How do you communicate them? How do you do planning? Nexus sprint planning, we call it. But how do you plan a product when you've got three or four teams, or five or six or seven or eight teams, all working together? And I think there's a lot more practices that we need to develop to help teams do that. So I think scaling. So measure to allow us to inspect and adapt better. Nexus to allow multiple teams to effectively work together in an effective way. I think another thing is around the values. So the values came out on July this year. We added values back to the Scrum Guide. They were kind of in and then they were out, and you know. And the reason why Ken and Jeff invested and put, I mean, they did a podcast on this, but a webinar on this, but the reason why they put the values back were, one, because a lot of people were asking for it, so user voice, so we listened and we put them back. But the other reason was because there's a certain level of integrity and certain level of moral responsibility. You know, that maybe the VW example is a good one, maybe healthcare.gov is another one in the US, but there's examples over and over again that demonstrate our lack of professionalism, our lack of integrity. You know, do no harm is obviously the doctor's sort of badge, and software professionals need that. And so we're trying to bring those in as well.
Yeah, well, certainly if we look at other organizations that are trying to create a profession, the IEEE, to be a member of that, or to call yourself a software engineer, you're signing up to a code of professional conduct.
Yeah, and what's interesting about these values, the five values, things like courage and the like, is that they fit very nicely in those frameworks. So this is another way of talking about them. And by making them visible in the Scrum Guide, we encourage people at the retrospective to discuss them. We encourage people to make them visible. Like, how did I demonstrate this value? What did I do in this situation? Was this an example of where I wasn't being courageous, or my commitment was off, or whatever those things are? And I think that that just helps us talk about them. I don't think it's the only time we need to think about integrity and the like. I think we all have a moral responsibility as professionals in our industry. But these might help raise the transparency of it. So measurement, some stuff on scaling, particularly around teams of teams, and then the values, the moral side, or the social side, as it were. I hate to say moral because that always makes me sound boring. Anyway, and then lastly, and this is something that I don't know whether we'll actually make progress. I hope we will. It's clear that Scrum is really hard to do at scale in traditional organizations. And I'll be talking about this afternoon. The culture, organizations today are built around delivering in the most efficient way that minimizes risks to that organization. They're about maximizing stakeholder value in a very short-term focused way. That's what our world has become. And I don't think that that environment and those objectives fit nicely with Scrum and Agile. I believe that, and you'll be hearing that, you know, frequently in our industry, that the objective of Agile is about learning and adaption around that. You know, whether it be Lean or whether it be Agile, ultimately it's about the value that we're delivering, not how we deliver it as such. And I think that organizations are built around the how, not the what, you know. So I think that we need to think about what kind of organizations we need to put in place to make Agile successful. Maybe it's a hack, you know, things like SAFe and DAD and less so for less, which is weird, but don't necessarily address this. They provide you with mechanisms to allow your existing organization to become, at least to improve. But maybe this is a hack, but I think we have to think about that organization. And the work in title of the stuff we're doing is something called Scrum Studio, which is very much like a digital innovation center. The things that you need to put in place, like how do you do leadership? How do you do measurement? How do you bring in that craftsmanship model? How do you ensure professionalism? How do you, you know, et cetera. How do you engage your business? Where does support live? You know, all those questions. How do you plan? How do you budget? How do you fund? You know, all this sort of stuff. We have to provide some ideas around that as a community. Not that I am dissing any of the scaling frameworks. I'm not. You know, they have their place. I think that there's a propensity for those to lead us just to optimize what we have. I think, personally, that there needs to be a next generation of product delivery organizations created, and those tend to be very flat, look more like an ISV and less like an IT department. And we need to provide a blueprint, dare I say framework, to allow that to happen.
Yesterday afternoon, the closing keynote was talking about the singularity and the rate of change and so forth. Yeah, can Scrum keep up?
I don't know. To predict the future is fun, but ultimately it's a waste of time. I mean, I thought we'd have flying cars, mate. I don't know about you. Technology is not a linear progression. It's a exponential lumpy graph that has all sorts of weirdnesses around, you know. So I don't know. One thing I do know. So one thing that we've done at Scrum.org, we have 170 plus professional Scrum trainers. And recently we introduced collaborative courseware development as a mechanism using GitHub and some of the technologies around that as a mechanism to basically get feedback, develop collaboratively, share ideas. The sign-off for the courses is still Ken. He still gets heavily involved in it. But ultimately we have this very collaborative world happening. The other thing that we're doing more of is we're trying to build bridges with other communities, you know, and some of which I've got to, some of which I haven't. One of the reasons why I think I'm at Scrum.org is because Ken believes that his style was very successful for the first 21 years, but maybe we need a sort of more of a bridge builder in going forward, and hopefully I can do that. obviously with the integrity and the compass that, that Ken has provided, because, you know, that, that integrity, that belief of this is Scrum, this isn't, you know, all the other stuff, great, but it isn't Scrum, this, this is what Scrum stands for, this is what we're trying to achieve. I think that if we can do that, if we can build those bridges, if we can get away from the fighting about stupid things and waste of time, and instead of, and be say and not but, you know, that sort of, it's easy to say but, it's easy to, and maybe our political politicians could also learn from this, it's easy to build a story based on hatred and anger and insulting other people and other practices and other ideas. But ultimately, I think we need to get away from that. Software delivery, software is the most important commodity of our world today. It is the thing that's going to solve cancer. It is the thing that's going to put a man on, or a woman on, hopefully both. A lot more fun if there's two, on Mars. It's going to solve energy crisis. It's going to feed everybody in the world. But to do that requires us to fundamentally step away from the Industrial Revolution ideas, the ideas of mass production, the ideas of factories, the ideas of, and approach organizations, how we work as teams, how we do innovation, how we learn in a very different way. And the only way we're going to get that right, or the most effective way we're going to get that right, is to work together on it and not to perpetuate, isn't it? Don't you think it's ironic, Shane, that the DevOps community and the delivery and the development community have separate conferences? Don't you think it's ironic that the Agile community and the DevOps community and the Lean Startup community all have separate conferences, and all of them say the most important thing that we do is break down the silos between our organizations? And, yeah. And don't you think it's ironic that we're perpetuating the models and the patterns of the past in the models of the future? We need to move away from that. That's so important. And, you know, the Agile Alliance has definitely tried to do it. Your work there, I applaud you and Rebecca and some of the other people that have been involved doing that to try to bring down some of those barriers, to try to get technology people into the Agile conference, leaders into the Agile conference. What are they going to do? You know, just to get an open bar, they'll always come. But for both camps, actually, interestingly, that's a British strategy, sorry, as you well know. But the point is that we need to bring down those barriers, and I'm hoping that we can do that in the Scrum community. It's very easy to throw stones at Scrum. Yes, we're not perfect. Yes, there's a lot of people doing Scrum that are doing it wrong. Yes, sometimes we have forgotten our truth and our values, but remind us rather than throw stones, because if you start shouting at us, we will shout back, and there's 15 million of us, and that's going to be a pain. So hopefully we can start building some of those bridges going forward.
And that's a wonderful note to end on. Dave, thank you very much.
Hey, always a pleasure to spend some time with you, sir.